Hi, and welcome to Failureology, a podcast about engineering failures. I'm your host, Nicole.
And I'm Brian, and we're both from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Welcome to our 31st mini failure episode.
We're bringing you engineering failures in bite-sized pieces.
Make no mistake, though, these are still significant failures, but they either have pretty straightforward causes or not enough information for a full episode of Failureology.
These episodes are also just the failure, no news, and no ads, for now at least.
It's pretty much Failureology light. This week's mini failure is about asbestos, the fourth in a series of at least five, maybe six, possibly more episodes about environmental disasters. We've talked about the Love Canal, Minamata, and the Bhopal gas disaster so far in this very short mini episode mini failure series.
This episode is about the carcinogenic fibrous material, not the town in Quebec, although we'll certainly talk about the town a little bit.
So just as a side note, when I was much younger than I am today, which was a really long time ago, I thought, when I first heard about asbestos, I thought it had something to do with what people said after you sneezed. So I was incredibly confused about the health risks associated with that. So I thought there was some health risk with saying words to people after they sneezed. So I just didn't say anything to anyone when they sneezed. So people told me I was rude. Later on, I figured out asbestos is different than bless you or God bless you or achoo. So I was kind of confused as a kid. I'm still a little confused now.
I've never heard that before. That's a really funny story.
It was just the way that I heard it. It was in my little kid brain. I was like, I conflated saying something to somebody after they sneezed to doing long-term damage, health damage. It was very confusing to me as a kid, but I figured it was one of those weird adult things I didn't understand. Turns out I was completely wrong.
I think we've all done that as kids. It's just how kid brains work.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing your story.
You're more than welcome. And now hundreds, thousands of people know about my story at being confused as a little kid. I'll probably share more stories about me being confused as a little kid and possibly as an adult. Back to asbestos. Asbestos is a group of six naturally occurring fibrous silicate minerals made up of heat, electricity, and corrosion-resistant fibers that have been used in insulation, they've been used as a fire retardant, they've been used in flooring and brake pads, a whole host of other consumer products.
And honestly, asbestos sounds like an amazing product. It addresses a lot of issues. It's a fairly simple material to work with. It's just really, really dangerous for humans. So catch 22, it's really unfortunate that a product that is such a good insulator, a really good fire retardant, is also so hazardous to us.
Yeah, I feel that asbestos is not the only material like this, where it has all of these great, amazing properties, but then there's also some health risks or environmental risks or a combination of health, environment, and safety risks. But we're talking about asbestos, inhalation of asbestos fibers, which are generally released when the asbestos is disturbed. They lead to various dangerous lung conditions such as lung cancer, mesothelioma, asbestosis.
Yeah.
Okay. Dating back to the Stone Age, with large-scale mining beginning around 1900, asbestos, like we mentioned, it's a great insulator, great fire retardant, but due to its nasty health effects, its use has been significantly reduced in North America since the 1980s. After health effects were more widely acknowledged in the 1970s. So Canada completely banned import of asbestos in 2018.
Which seems like a really long time to take to ban asbestos. And industry was aware much earlier than the public of the health effects, the negative health effects of asbestos. And we're going to talk about this also in the next episode, but industry knew that there was a problem, but they were making so much money with this product that they wanted to keep selling it. And so they tried to keep those dangers a secret from the general public for quite some time. And that's why it took so long to completely ban the import of asbestos in Canada and several other countries.
Yeah, certainly where I went to university or college for our American listeners, The university I went to was constructed in the late 1960s, early 1970s. So there was still quite a lot of asbestos that was present in the buildings and in the classrooms that were there. So I feel like every semester there'd be more rooms that were kind of cordoned off or quarantined for asbestos removal, and they'd be taped off, and they'd kind of go through the remediation process, but we just couldn't use those classrooms or lecture halls for a period of time until they cleaned out all the asbestos. So besides Canada banning it in 2018, Australia banned it in 2003, the United Kingdom banned it in 1999. So still a fairly long time after, you know, countries and health authorities were aware of all of the negative effects of asbestos or negative health effects it was having on people. Unfortunately, the U.S. has still not completely banned asbestos. So the Environmental Protection Agency, or the EPA that we've talked about numerous times on this podcast, they issued a ban and phase-out rule in 1989. But in 1991, this was overturned after industry supporters challenged it in a landmark lawsuit. Asbestos is a regulated substance, and it's been banned in specific products or applications, but some still legally allow trace amounts of asbestos. I think just kind of reading about asbestos, I haven't seen any positive health effects of it. I recognize that there's, you know, great things it can do on the on the insulation side and the fire retardant side of things, but as we'll talk about it, we feel that the health risks to everyone that's exposed to it far outweigh the beneficial side of the fire side of things and the insulation side of things.
Yeah, so health experts have said that no amount of asbestos exposure is safe, and that's why it's been fully banned in several countries. But for the most part, the higher the concentration or the longer a period of time, the worse the exposure. And that's because asbestos fibers accumulate in the body every time you're exposed, and there's no way to reverse it or for your body to remove those fibers. This is, of course, made worse by the fact that the fibers are easy to inhale once they're airborne. That's why when you're doing a renovation project, if you're not disturbing the asbestos or you're not moving it or changing it in any way, it's typically allowed to remain, at least on projects I've been in. Don't quote me on that. I'm not an expert in that field, but that's what I've seen happen. Whereas if you're doing a renovation where you're changing the flooring and it's got the 9x9 asbestos tiles in it, or you're removing some piping or ductwork that has asbestos in the insulation, you have to abate all of that asbestos before you can carry on with the demolition. And abatement has been a significant part of a lot of the renovation projects that I've worked on over the last 15 years, just making sure that hazardous material is removed from the project or the building before workers continue on with the renovation project. You can also get secondary exposure of asbestos, and that's when someone carries the fibers on their clothing and then those fibers are inhaled by other people who weren't near the initial exposure point. And that's why the people who are remediating asbestos wear those white Tyvek suits, because they want to contain as many of the fibers as possible, and they have to go through a clean room and I believe a showering process to an extent to make sure that they remove all of those fibers from their person before going out into the world and potentially exposing other people. The U.S. military specifically used asbestos extensively from the 1930s to 1970s, especially in naval ships, which has led, unfortunately, to a high amount of asbestos-related diseases among veterans. There was also a concern that residents and workers in the area of the World Trade Center collapse were exposed to high levels of asbestos, among a lot of other hazards. And it's believed that more than 1,000 tons of asbestos were released into the air when the towers came down, which just puts a really unfortunate spin on an already extremely tragic event.
So in addition to the hazards that Nicole mentioned for remediation projects or the unfortunate case of September 11th and the World Trade Center collapse, there are additional environmental exposures if you live near an asbestos mine or an asbestos processing facility. One example of that is Asbestos Quebec, known as Val de Sources since December 15th, 2020. Asbestos was located about 150 kilometers east of Montreal. This town, it's the site of the Jeffrey Mine, which used to be the world's largest asbestos mine, and the Magnola Magnesium Refinery, which is now closed. It was also the site of the 1949 asbestos strike. So the strike, it was a four-month labor dispute that was one of the most violent and bitter labor disputes in Quebec and in Canadian history.
And the strike had nothing to do with the dangerous effects of asbestos, because that was unknown at the time. It was related to working conditions and pay and things that a lot of factory workers strike about, that we've seen for decades, just poor working conditions, but not necessarily related to the asbestos material itself.
Yeah, I've had the fortune of doing a couple mine-related tours for, you know, iron mines or copper mines. I've never done an asbestos mine tour, but as interesting as the mine tours are, and I really like doing them, the working conditions, I can't imagine some of the working conditions, especially back in the, you know, in the 1940s or the 1930s or the 1950s, when a lot of that was still done, you know, in a fairly manual process, or I guess a labor intensive process, before a lot of modern mining equipment was implemented into mining. So yeah, definitely a good thing, I think, to strike about is, you know, working conditions and health and safety, and just overall, the mine was probably not a great place for people to work. So today, there are still over 1 million tons of asbestos mined worldwide, with Russia being the largest producer at 53%, followed by Kazakhstan at 16%, China at 15%, and Brazil at 11.5%. China, India, and Indonesia are the largest consumers, representing almost 70% of the global market.
As early as the late 19th century, scattered reports on the health risks of asbestos emerged in Canada, Europe, and the US. And by the 1920s, leading medical journals had published articles linking asbestos to asbestosis, which is a new and sometimes fatal lung condition where inhaled asbestos scars the lungs and makes breathing difficult. And by new, I mean new at that time. It's not new anymore. The disease was a serious problem for asbestos workers. No surprise there. They often worked in thick clouds of asbestos dust each day. Even in the 1920s, doctors believed asbestosis could be prevented by limiting exposure to asbestos. It would take several decades, however, before asbestos was properly regulated in the U.S., amongst many other countries, and workers learned their jobs could lead to cancer and other serious health complications years down the line. So that's the thing. Asbestos lays dormant in your body until you accumulate enough of it that you start to see these health effects. And so you could be exposed and not, you could be exposed and have a high level of exposure and not really see the effects for 10, 20 years. And so that becomes really challenging. And that's something we've seen with some of these lawsuits, is tying that health effect back to the initial cause when the health effect happens so much later, so many years down the road. And it's really challenging legally to tie the cause and effect together when there's such a time span in between. Ultimately, though, asbestos manufacturers have been held liable for the diseases their products cause because they covered up evidence of asbestos's health effects and continued exposing workers and consumers, which is, I mean, silver lining. Their trickery eventually caught up with them and they were eventually held liable, but it doesn't undo all of the damage that they did continually exposing workers and consumers to their products for decades. Former employees of asbestos production companies are filing lawsuits against them, and so are the workers who used asbestos products on the job. Family members who develop mesothelioma through secondhand exposure are also eligible to file a legal claim. People with mesothelioma can be compensated through multiple legal options, including trust funds established by the asbestos companies before they went bankrupt, which is a good thing that they were able to collect that money and put it in trust before it was all gone. And hundreds of thousands of patients and families have sought compensation for illnesses caused by the negligence of the asbestos industry over the years. And these claims hold the industry liable for the harm they've caused and provide the much needed compensation to cover medical bills and lost wages. The compensation is the financial award paid to patients and family members. And the average settlement is about $1 to $1.4 million per person. And the asbestos trust funds can pay more than $150,000. And I found this information from a website that offers information about people interested in filing a claim against the asbestos industry, which I thought was interesting. Of course, it's probably a little bit biased, but I did think it was interesting that it provided this type of statistic and this potential outcome of those that have been exposed.
So there you have it, asbestos. Deadly little fibers that are in seemingly everything and can lay dormant for decades before wreaking havoc. If you think you have asbestos in your house, we highly recommend that you get it abated.
Thanks for listening to this mini failure episode. For our regular episodes, check out Failurology wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to chat with us, our Twitter handle is @Failurology. You can email us at thefailurologypodcast@gmail.com. You can connect with us on LinkedIn, or you can message us right in the Patreon app. There are links to all of these in the show notes. Bye, everyone. Talk soon.